Hello and welcome to the 100 podcast. It's Ed and Charlie here with you. Hope you're well. Some context, this is being recorded in my living room. Charlie is actually here, which is lovely. We've been watching the draft together. Neither of us have our microphones here, so the audio quality might not be as great, but hopefully you'll be fine given we're turning this around for the morning after the 100 draft. We're going to recap the women's draft, the men's draft, relatively briefly. We'll go deeper into some of this a bit later on, but really this is just a quick hit of everything that happened and our quick analysis. And Charlie, I'll be honest with you, that was fucking chaos.
Yeah, look, I think a lot of stuff happened, and some of it we were expecting, but most of it we were not at all. I'm still kind of reeling from it, to be honest, so I think a lot of this will be me working out my thoughts as we go, because frankly, I'm still not entirely sure how I feel about a lot of what's just happened.
First of all, can we just talk about the broadcast itself? I mean, it was utterly chaotic, and I know Sky clearly didn't do much effort into preparing for this. I thought it would be nice to have some highlights of the players, you know, seeing what they can do, just a couple of highlights of them, I don't know, hitting a couple of cover drives or something, some wickets, just to add a little bit of colour to proceedings. Nothing was really explained very well. For some reason, in one round, we just had NASA chatting whilst all these picks came in and we had no idea what was happening. Poor old Daggers was sitting there just filling for time with no idea what was happening around him. It's just, to be honest, it's a bit of a disaster.
Yeah, I don't think it was ideal, and I think it showed why Sky haven't been overly keen to broadcast the draft over the last couple of years, because especially when none of the coaches are in the room, it's all happening over Microsoft Teams, everyone's in a different place. It's very hard to make that particularly compelling viewing.
Yeah.
There was a lot of confusion. I don't think it helped that a lot of interviews and general chit-chat was happening at the same time as the drafts were coming in, because it was very hard to follow what was happening, particularly when RTMs were in play.
Yeah.
The graphics did not make it very clear what was happening, why it was happening. It was very hard to follow, even for us who are tragically obsessed with this kind of stuff. We just didn't know what was happening half the time. So if that was your first draft experience as a live show, which it may well have been, then I pity you, because that was very hard to keep up with.
It was very hard to keep up with. And it's not hard. Just so, you know, some player graphics, some actual analysis, some sort of idea of what's going on would be helpful. It was great, it was televised. I just think it would be very easy to do more, and I would like to see more done. But let's move away from the actual broadcast and let's talk about the picks. We'll start with the women's draft. A lot of chaos at the top, obviously. Welsh Fire tried to take Sophie Devine, Birmingham Phoenix right to match. They tried to take Danny Wyatt, Southern Brave right to match. Eventually they get Sophia Dunkley, which I think we both agree was the best pick available, really.
I think it was. I think it was quite clever from the Fire. They wanted to get those RTMs off the board straight away, force Phoenix and Brave to use them pretty much as soon as possible. I think we knew that Dunkley was going to be the logical pick there. I mean, if I'm Brave, I'm maybe RTMing Dunkley ahead of Wyatt personally, but that's by the by. Like, the point is, Welsh Fire got the best domestic player on the board available with their first pick, so fair play, good pick.
Yeah, I think they did. And yeah, I would agree. I'm surprised Southern Brave didn't go with Dunkley. I know why they like Wyatt experience and that, but Dunkley's a, you know, an ascending superstar, very young. For me, that would have been the first pick I'd have tried to make if I was the Welsh Fire. I think that's, for them, it's absolutely spot on. And we'll talk more about the high picks, but I was quite impressed with what Welsh Fire did overall. I like the fact they brought in Shabnam Ismail, bit of heat, bit of pace into the attack. Fred Davies in round six was a bargain. Bringing back Alex Hartley on the final pick of the draft, good business. Laura Harris, really excited by a half strike rate batter coming in. Obviously, George Railways brings experience too. Overall, I was pretty happy with how the Welsh Fire women's side went about this.
I agree. They would have had some last minute changes to make for the strategy, because obviously Annabelle Sutherland pulled out just days before the draft. In a way, I think that might have been a blessing in disguise for them.
Yeah.
I like Annabelle Sutherland. I think she's got a lot to offer, player with a lot of potential, but I don't think they would have been able to get Laura Harris if they had Sutherland on the books. And frankly, I think they got a better player for less money in Laura Harris.
Yeah.
So that's worked out really nicely for them. It also meant they could stockpile a couple of handy domestic players higher up as well. Yeah, I think that's a really good draft for them. I don't think it's necessarily perfect, but on the whole, I think with what they had to work with, that feels like a really nice core to start off with.
Give me a top five of Dunkley, Matthews, Beaumont, Harris, Elwis. Davies, you know, is a good seamer to go with Ismail. You've got some spin from Hartley. Hayley Matthews bowls as well. I think it's a good start. I think given what they started with, I think they should be very happy with that. I was impressed with a lot of the business that they did. the rest of round one, I think Grace Harris was a bit of a surprise to us going that early to London Spirit.
Yeah, that was... I think we all like Grace Harris. Yeah. I think we knew she was going to go. I didn't necessarily have her down as second overall pick. I feel like we were expecting somebody like Harmbreet Kaur to go there, maybe, or Joanne Rodrigues, who went undrafted. That was one of the biggest shocks for me, I think, not seeing her go. Look, I think it's a pretty solid pick. I'm more than happy that Harris is going there. I just felt like with Spirit, they don't have any seam bowling, and they didn't beforehand, and they don't now. And I really felt like that might have been something they looked to target there. That might have been a spot for Ismail, for example. In hindsight, that might be something you look back on and think maybe we could have done that. But on the whole, yeah, Grace Harris is the exciting pick, irrespective of that quip.
I'm a bit surprising go for Wolvart over Harris, personally. Originals went for Wolvart, which I think is an interesting tactic on that surface. Probably not the way I'd have gone about things, to be honest with you. I would prefer to have someone with higher intent at the top of the order and then someone who can rotate the strike a bit more in the middle overs would be my personal pick for them. But Wolvart's a great signing. Well, it does mean, though, Kate Cross headed to the Superchargers. We liked that.
That was easily the biggest surprise early doors for me. That was really interesting. I think we'd all assumed that Kate Cross would go straight back to Originals with that first pick. And I think it's a great pick for Superchargers. We knew they needed some seam bowling going into the draft, and they secured the best domestic seamer available in Kate Cross. I don't know if they thought she was going to be available, frankly. I think they might have been very pleasantly surprised that she was. But either way, she has ended up going to Superchargers, crossing the northern border. And I think it's a really good move for Superchargers. I think they've got potential captain there as well. You know, really good signing for them.
Yeah, I think we talked about this previously, that the Northern Superchargers had their big three overseas batters last year. Didn't work. They needed some domestic bowling, just some bowling, to be frank. Kate Cross brings that in spades. Good hits down the order. Experience. Going to be someone you're going to throw the ball to for key overs. Personally liked that pick. Harmanpreet Kaur to the Rockets is great. I think that's just really fun. Having a top order, what's going to be? Kaur, Sivabrunt, Lee, Bryony Smith. That's going to be really, really fun. And I'm really glad Harmanpreet Kaur's in the competition.
Yeah, me too. I thought she would have gone much earlier than that. I think we thought Spirit might have been a landing spot for her. I think we might have... I think in our mock draft, we had Laura Wolvart ending up at Trent Rockets, which I think would have been a good pick for them also. But Harmanpreet Kaur, I think they got a better player in that position. I think they'd be very happy that she fell through them there. And I think that completes a really nice top order for the Trent Rockets, which historically hasn't always been something that they've managed to quite pull off. I think they've been very dependent on a handful of all-rounders. And I think having that really gun specialist top order bat, along with Lizelle Lee lower down as well, that tops off a really nice top order. So that's good work for me.
Yeah. Susie Bates goes to Oval. Invincibles makes sense. Bring some leadership back to that franchise. They've also brought back Danny van Niekerk. So you get the original captain, the second captain. No idea who's going to be captain in the third season, but I think it's you get a lot from Bates and Cap and van Niekerk. Just so much experience. Winfield Hill in that side as well. And then you have Alice Capps, who's a young gun. I think whilst people might not, you know, not be like thinking this is the most flashy draft, the Oval Invincibles are always in a good place with the talent they've got locked in, and young talent, and also the overseas they've brought in here.
Yeah, remember the Shadow Retentions as well. Yeah. They've got a handful of really nice young players locked in there too. I think we all knew that they didn't have to do too much work. I think Susie Bates and Danny van Niekerk seemed like relatively safe bets that they were going to look to bring them back. I mean, why wouldn't you? They're both really good cricketers. They know the club. They've proven to be good players within this setup. It makes sense. Likewise, Matty Villiers, RTM coming straight back, a no-brainer, really. So not particularly flashy stuff, because most of the players they've signed have already played for the club. It's a very familiar look, but it's a very familiar look for a reason, you know, because they've won the last two seasons. So why wouldn't you keep that together?
And let's just say you're bringing Eva Gray back and Sophia Smale back on the shadow retention. That's just Oval Invincibles from last year. And you're fine with that because they were great last year. I think that's good business. Overall, I think there was a really interesting run on leg spinners in the kind of third round. Sarah Glenn, Amanda Jade Wellington, Georgia Wareham all going to Spirit Originals and Superchargers respectively. I'm kind of looking at the teams I really enjoy. And we talked about Welsh Fire a little bit. I liked the work that the Manchester Originals did. I think Wolvart obviously brings them, you know, just a heft to the batting. Might not have been my choice, but just experience, run scoring, like that. being able to pair Amanda Jegg Wellington and Sophie Eccleston, just for me, that's so exciting. So you've got two gun spinners, a bit from Emma Lamb, a bit from Deandra Dottin, two gun all-round spinners. Wolvar at the top with Dottin and Lamb. Clearly, they think Katie George is going to be something from the fact they've picked her up. Obviously, a young, talented left arm is barely playing the 100 due to injury, when she has barely bowled. I quite like the business they've done. It's an incomplete side, but I like a lot of the pieces.
Yeah, I agree. I'm surprised that Amanda J. Wellington made it that far in the draft, to be honest. I really thought she would have gone earlier. I'm also slightly surprised that, I'm going to say I'm surprised that they used the RTM on them, but they didn't have the choice at the Southern Brave. They had obviously used it on Danny White beforehand. But regardless of that, Eccleston and Wellington is such a good leg spin pair. I couldn't really think of a better duo in world cricket currently.
Yeah.
Too. It's really exciting, isn't it? So I don't know how they pulled it off, but fair play to them. That particular part of their attack is really fun.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. Obviously, they'll lean on Dottin, I think, to bowl a decent amount of the overs with Katie George. A couple of their seamers from last year didn't get picked in this, so I imagine maybe they'll bring back someone like, Jackson, just to fill out that room a little bit. But overall, I think you're happy. And I think also when you have some gun all-rounders, Eccleston, Jegg Wellington, Dottin and Lamb, whose numbers against left-hand batters are very good. When you have all of those and theoretically in top seven, I think that opens up the possibilities of what you can do with the rest of the bowling attack and just fill it out. So I liked their work. I also liked the Phoenix's work. I thought getting Hannah Baker in as well as Katie Levick, locking in one gun leg spinner. Katie Levick going in round seven was ridiculous. We'll come to that in a moment. But then also locking in Hannah Baker and then bringing back Eve Jones. Just solid business. I like what they did.
Yeah, really nice value there as well. Exciting spin attack with Baker and Levick and the potential of Abtaka Maksud being locked in as a shadow retention as well. That's three really solid spinners there. So that's a really nice part of their attack locked in. Haven't got to worry about that anymore going forward. So yeah, lots to like about that work. Nice value.
Three leg spinners. Gotta love it if they bring that back. Let's talk about some of our favourite picks, and I think yours would be Katie Levick.
Yes, I think I've spoken before on this podcast about how much I rate Katie Levick. I think we both think she's a really nice point of difference. There aren't that many spinners in the women's game that really do what she does. I think you, Ed, has spoken about how you'd quite like to see her in the picture of England, potentially.
I would,
as well.
Yeah.
And I think to get her at round seven for 15k, really good bit of business. I was surprised that Superchargers didn't have to bring her back maybe in round five ahead of Davis and Richards potentially as well. That might be a landing spot for her. Surprised me that she didn't. Either way, their loss is the Phoenix's game.
Yeah, she was the only good bowler for the Superchargers last year. An average of 16 from six wickets. Conrad at 5.82. She was excellent. I think she adds a point of difference. She's not. I don't think people are going to see her in the England side because of the unique action and everything, but I'd like to see her around there. And I'm really surprised that, again, I don't fully understand why, if you're the Supercharger, you wouldn't want to bring her back. I know you brought in Georgia Wareham. Great. You can play two leggies. And so I thought the fact that Phoenix got her at that stage, I'm surprised, it's a little surprised maybe that the Welsh Fire didn't go after her. But I think that pick is just really exciting. You can get a leg spinner that cheap. One for me I'll mention, and there's a bit of a slide here for Freya Davies. Obviously in and around the England squad, a good seamer. Lots of players, she went at the back end of round six. I was really surprised that the Spirit opted for Sophie Munro over Freya Davies personally. I don't really know what the issue was with Davies. I feel like you've got a really good player who's established, who's played international cricket. Great value, obviously, for the Welsh Fire. Bit confusing in my part.
Yeah, I got to say that confused me as well. I think we both felt like she was going to go there at round three.
Mm.
And then we thought she'd definitely go there in round five. And they passed up on her both times. I don't know if that's a behind-the-scenes thing or I don't know if that's just them wanting to move on and go in a different direction. But it is particularly odd, given that Spirit did not have a single seamer locked in prior to the draft and still do not have a single frontline seamer locked in.
It's just confusing for me. And that's a whole thing with the Spirit. But obviously the Spirit not having a seamer isn't necessarily too much of an issue, of course, because, and this was something we didn't think could happen, they've only picked two overseas players, as have the Birmingham Phoenix, the monarchs in this league of finding stupid loopholes. Neither have picked a third overseas here. Spirit have Grace Harris, and they have Amelia Kerr locked in. And obviously the Phoenix have Devine and Perry, but couple of slots here, and I wonder if those just thought, well, let's look in the domestic talent. And we know, for example, the Spirit Without a Seam, I think Kim Garth is going to be there, or Orla Prendergast. That might be quite a sneaky way of going around this and getting a good seamer. So that could be quite fun.
I think it works because the domestic talent in this competition is relatively limited at the draft compared to the wider range of overseas talent. And that's purely because there's more overseas slots. So that's purely because there's more domestic slots and less overseas slots, right? Yeah. So there's very obviously going to be a lot more overseas players fighting for a lot less slots. Ergo, there's much more overseas talent to pick from because there's less slots to fill. Mm-hmm. So that does mean that if you lock in your domestic players early, hoover up the best of that talent you can do, which I think the Phoenix have done very nicely, you can then have the pick of what's left from the overseas barrel, which currently looks pretty solid, I would say.
Yeah.
So you can go in and basically pick off whoever you want and negotiate with them directly. It's a really clever tactic, I think. It could work very nicely.
Yeah. I'm very interested to see where they go with that, but interesting one to keep an eye on. More reactions to the women's draft coming up, but let's move on to the men's. I think that the first thing we need to say about the men's side of this, the Welsh Fire fucking rock. Like, we've spent so much time over the past few weeks and months thinking, how can the Welsh Fire rebuild this team? And I think, and we'll get to the first overall pick, which is a surprise in a moment, I think they've done a class job.
Yeah, I have to agree. I mean, obviously there is one issue which we'll come to later, one thing they don't have.
Mm.
But what they do have is an awful lot of very fun cricketers. Shaheen Afridi and Harris Ralph are the standout to me.
Yeah.
Lahore Qalandars, Pakistan, beautiful, beautiful picks. They're really exciting. I know a lot of people on our Twitter mentioned have been very excited about that today. David Willey as well, really nice pick. We both carded Willey going to Welsh Fire in round one or two for a long time. He brings so much balance to this team, which is the one thing they really struggled with in their last couple of seasons, being able to balance that team and having a bowler in their top six. And now they've got that potentially in David Willey. I feel like there's a lot to like here. It feels like on paper, this is a very fun team.
And I think the way they've approached this is really sensible as well. So let's just go, you know, pick by pick, really. The Northern Superchargers were going to pick Ashton Turner. We knew that was their plan. He got taken by the Originals. And so Welsh Fire thought instantly, well, we know then, if their first pick's not there, they're going to have Glenn Phillips. They could take Glenn Phillips and 75K. Brilliant. I think Glenn Phillips is a class player. Harris Ralph had some heat to this side, which we love. Roloff van der Merwe, we have spoken on literally every single podcast, and we haven't necessarily mocked him there, but we've always said Roloff van der Merwe would be perfect for Cardiff. Perfect spinner there. His record there in his career is whilst, you know, he is playing against Glamorgan, so that's be clear, you know, lesser standard of competition, but just a class player who fits those conditions perfectly. Stevie Eskenazi is a great cover for Johnny Bairstow if he's not there. We've been slamming the Dan Douthwaite hammer for ages. Strike rate is phenomenal. Obviously, again, he is not Welsh, like the broadcast said. He plays for Glamorgan. He went to university in Cardiff. He's from fucking Kingston-upon-Thames. Well, he's not Welsh, or I'm more Welsh than he is. But point stands is they've, with every pick, I think, gone about this in a really sensible way and a really intentional way. And I'm impressed by that. And what I'm most impressed by is that when we were having the discussions about the Charlie, about what are the Welsh Fire going to do with the first overall pick, it was David Willey or Shaheen Shah Afridi. Those were the players we were debating. They got both of them, despite taking neither with the first overall pick, which was potentially Tim David, who got right to matched there. It was potentially going to be Tomcola Cadmore, who got right to matched to the Trent Rockets. And it ended up being Tom Abell.
Yes, and look, I think we all knew that Tom Abell was going to end up at the Welsh Fire, probably as captain. This has been telegraphed for a while.
Mm.
I don't think we necessarily thought he would be their first pick. I think we thought he could probably fall to them 100K or 75K potentially. But they clearly thought, well, we want this guy. He's going to be our captain. Let's make sure we get him. And I'll be honest, I think there's probably a degree of luck there because I was surprised that David Willey fell to them where he did. I thought he would have gone then.
I thought he'd gone to the Spirit. That would have been my, I don't know, I was surprised. We'll get to the Spirit. We'll get to the Spirit. But I was surprised that Willey did fall to them. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. So I think, you know, that worked in their favour, being able to pick up Willey and Shaheen where they did. But ultimately, that doesn't really matter how they got there. What does matter is that they got three really good players, probably the first three players that we would have taken for this team as well, in a different order, but that's by the by. The point is they got three very good players, very early doors, and it was a really good start for them. And since then, I don't really think they stepped back. They they got a really good head of steam up, great momentum, and never really stopped. So fair play to them. Really exciting stuff.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting. Let's talk through what a Welsh Fire lineup might look like at this point. So let's say it's Johnny Bairstow at the top with Joe Clark. If it's not Bairstow, it's going to be Stevie Eskenazi. Tom Abel, Glenn Phillips, Ollie Pope, David Willey, Shaheen Sharif, Freddy Roloff, and Merv. Kind of a nice little middle order there. Willey and Shaheen kind of float up to either some left-handed options. But, you know, I think Abel's a clever and fun player. Phillips can access a lot of the square boundaries too, or like that. And then your bowling attack's going to be Willey, Shaheen, Ralph, Roloff, and then probably pick two of the seamers. Let's say it's Ball and Pain. The issue that they have is that they don't have a frontline leg spinner. They have the wonderful part-time off-spin of Glenn Phillips. Let's be honest, no one wants to depend on that. And they have Roloff van der Merwe, but they have no leg spinner. And that surprised me, given that two really good leg spinners went undrafted. That's the big hole.
Yeah, I think we both felt that one of Parkinson and Lintott would end up playing for the Welsh Fire. And not only did neither end up at the Welsh Fire, but neither ended up with a team at all, which I think was the biggest shock of this draft. I think that really baffled us, frankly. I know neither had a particularly strong 2022, but they're both still easily the best. You know, they're both easily in the top four or five spinners in the country. So for them to go completely undrafted was really surprising. And that does raise some interesting questions here about how these teams are approaching this, what they value, and how they think they can pick up players in the wildcard drafts. But yeah, I think it is a hole in this team for me. The lack of frontline leg spin is an issue for me.
Yeah, I think you can have the argument about Parkinson not fitting Sophia Carnes. Fair enough. Lintott, I would have liked to see him there, but let's not nitpick too much. This is a really fun team. There is a hole there, but there's always going to be a hole with the Welsh Fire. I think you look at this side and you think, there is something to work with here.
Yep.
You've got some batting firepower. You've suddenly got some all-rounders. So you might be able to have six bowling options, which would be great. I really like what they've done here. And if they could pick Lintott and Parkinson up in the wild card, then we're feeling great about this side. So just wanted to say, really impressed with the Welsh Fire. We'll get on to the other teams, but we talked about it, so let's talk about it. Lintott and Parkinson. We've got a lot of Twitter interaction about some of the picks and saying Babar Azam not going is a disgrace. You could debate that. I'm really upset for Matthew Parkinson. Lintott as well, but I think specifically Matt Parkinson, this guy's been around the England squad, who has been really, really good in the blast for a number of years, should have got more opportunities on the franchise circuit, sometimes gave it up because of being around the England squad and barely playing, sometimes had to miss out due to injury. If he'd gone down to the Big Bash, the amount of wickets he'd taken on those big boundaries and those batters who don't know what spin looks like. But I just feel really bad that off one average season, he's been binned off. I don't think that's fair. And I look at some of the players that have been picked, and I just don't understand why. I don't understand why, for example, your Manchester Originals, what would bring you to picking Josh Tung? I'm fine with Josh Tung. He's a nice and quick bowler. He shouldn't have gone above Henry Brooks. But why would you pick Josh Tung over Matt Parkinson? And I'm just really, I'm really saddened by that. I'm quite concerned that we've got a good leg spinner and everyone talks these days about England being able to deal with leg spinners anymore, but we have one that tosses it up and the instant he has a bad patch, it's like, no, thank you. You know who we really want to draft? Josh Tung, who hasn't played a T20 since 2021.
Yeah, it's a strange one. And I know this isn't technically fair because I'm comparing retained players with drafted players here.
Yeah.
But I do think it raises some interesting questions about the way the draft dynamic works. I'm going to give you a list of retained spinners who are playing in 100. And you tell me if you think Matt Parkinson or Jake Lintott are better than them. Mm. Okay? Matt Carter.
Better. Way better.
Yeah. Nathan Sauter.
Better.
Danny Briggs.
Better.
Callum Parkinson.
I think Callum Parkinson offers a very unique role in your side. I think you would probably say that Parky and Lintott are the bigger names. I think Callum Parkinson is a very useful power play bowler. So I think, yes, I see your point. Yes. But I think Callum Parkinson can make an exception there. But yeah.
Okay, I can keep going.
Go on,
Mason Crane.
Better.
Yeah, exactly. Do you see my point? There's a lot of spinners here who are pretty good.
Yeah.
But you'd rather have Parkinson or Lintott than them.
And I think what happened here is a lot of teams thought, okay, we're going to lock in Sauter at 30k, but there's no way we're going to get Parkinson or Lintott. And then they've just fallen to them and haven't done the thing about it. I'm confused. I'm really saddened. I don't know how Matt Parkinson's feeling, but I think it's really troubling for the way the game is going. Some of the names here, and there are some picks, and you know, I don't want to shit on guys who've been picked up. This is great for them, but there's some names here I don't think should have been picked up in front of these guys. I don't think you make any argument that they're better or more useful 100 players than Parkinson and Linter. Really disappointing, especially for Linter, who's come off this great wave, and you think maybe he picks up 75k. That'd be life-changing for him after doing so well in the 100 previously. I just think it's a shame, and I feel sorry for those guys. Because we could go pick by pick of players we don't think are as good. Yeah. So disappointing. Let's talk about some of the other picks. Brave, obviously, right to match Tim David. And then with the second overall pick, they picked Lewis Deploy over Ben Duckett. I'm slightly confused at this one. Obviously, they picked up Devon Conway later. So you have the left-hander who keeps. But I'm not completely sure why you would pick Duckett. You'd pick Deploy over Duckett. I mean, Deploy's theoretically the better pace hitter, but Duckett's the more complete player and seems to fit Southern Brave better, at least in my mind.
Well, frankly, I don't think another pace hitter is what they necessarily needed. I think a better spin hitter would have suited them really nicely.
Yeah.
I think the middle order for Southern Brave over the last couple of seasons has had a tendency to be a little bit stodgy and get a bit bogged down. Alex Davis in particular has been prone to a little bit of that. He's been retained, which surprised me, but that's not the point here. The point is that I think they needed someone who is capable of hitting the spin, is capable of scoring and keeping the scoreboard ticking over without getting bogged down. And I think Ben Duckett does that much better than Lewis Deploy.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think the question is, who's better, Lewis Deploy or Ben Duckett?
Ben Duckett. I like Lewis Deploy. Actually, I say this. I think if you listen to this podcast for a while, you'll know my feelings are on Lewis Deploy. He's a good cricketer, but he's not Ben Duckett's level. He's not 125k level, and he might be in this. And we've talked about the scarcity of domestic players. He might, and I think, you know, if he'd gone to the Superchargers at 100k, fine. Yeah. I don't see why you would go for him over Duckett, personally.
I agree.
There might be reasons for that. They might think he's a better fit, or he adds this or that. But I don't know. I think Duckett should have been the pick there, and I'm surprised with the way they went around that and confused at how they came to that decision. But what it does mean is that Birmingham Phoenix get Ben Duckett, something we've talked about would be the perfect fit since the inception, and we thought wouldn't happen as Welsh Firewood right to match. We found out the other night that the Welsh Fire wouldn't be allowed to right to match by Ben Duckett. Well, they could have, but Ben Duckett asked very nicely not to be. And here they are. Phoenix and Duckett, perfect marriage.
Yeah, it ticks a lot of boxes for them. Last season, the Phoenix had Matthew Wade in that position because they wanted a left-handed opening batter who could keep wicket. And there weren't really any obvious candidates for that role in the domestic circuit. This year, there was, and Ben Duckett is the perfect fit. I think he matches Will Smead very nicely because Smead is a really nice pace hitter, very good hitting straight, not so good against spin. That's fine because Ben Duckett is left-handed. Very strong against spin, very nice square. They had a perfect match for each other in that sense.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd open with Duckett, but I think he does provide a spin shield, which I think is important. I think I'd kind of prefer to have someone a bit more assertive. I'd be tempted just to pop Liam at the top of the order. I just, let's get him out there early doors. Let's just put him up there.
I don't know about that.
Let's unleash him.
Not Smead, I don't know. I think it's a bit samey.
I don't care about samey, because I think, I tell you what, is you can bring a spin onto Liam Livingston.
That's true.
He ain't having it.
That's true.
We've seen him take down Rashid Khan. We were there when he took down Rashid Khan at Trent Bridge.
That was magic.
He obliterated arguably the best T20 bowler of all time. So, I mean, look, it doesn't matter really where they bat theoretically, but I would be tempted to do that. Duckett 3, Moeen 4, however.
I think it would be flexible.
Yeah. And I think that's really important for the Phoenix. And I like what they've done there. The later picks, I mean, I get why they brought Miles Hammond back, I suppose, because they wanted the spin shield. I wouldn't have done it. I'm surprised Miles Hammond has been picked up given recent form. I get the spin shield thing. Just a little bit confused at that and Jamie Smith. I think the Jamie Smith conversation is different because he's got a career T20 strike of 116. Yes. It's not good. It's not good enough. Clearly, there's a player in there. We've seen him do lots of stuff with the Lions. We've seen him really go aggressive in Red Bull cricket for the Lions. And clearly, there's a player there ready to be unleashed. So maybe in a year or two, we look back at this, it's great. But for now, Smith and Hammond, not inspiring me for 2023.
I was surprised as well, I'll be honest. I felt like they would definitely have gone for a young, high upside boundary hitter. We know that's the kind of player that the Phoenix like. I think we're looking at the likes of Sol Budinger or Ali Orr, potentially.
Ali Orr would have been a great fit in my mind.
Jamie Smith does surprise me because his record at T20 level, as you said, Ed, is not really comparable with the likes of Budinger or Ali Orr just yet. But clearly, we know that the Phoenix are very big on their analysis. We know that they're very good at finding boundary hitters of potential, like Chris Benjamin in the first season, for example, only played that one D20 game and came and did really well. Will Smith barely played as well, and look how well he did. I guess that's probably the thinking here. They must have seen something in Smith that makes them think he's going to be a similar player long term. So if that's the case, fair enough. But right now, I am a little confused.
I get that they probably want another keeper, because obviously you've got Benjamin there. Duckett might miss a couple of games from the test side.
True.
So I get that they want another keeper. I personally am surprised that it wasn't an Ali Orr. If I'm just thinking of what I've seen, Ali Orr or Jamie Smith, I think Ali Orr's upside in the T20 game is pretty huge.
Yeah.
So, but look, you know, let's see about Jamie Smith. I'm not a fan of the Hammond pick, but I think they like him. We know they like him. Yep. He offers, potentially he does what you think Duckett's going to do for you.
Yeah.
Just obviously not as well, but he offers that skill set. So I get it.
I would also say one thing on Miles Hammond, and you might scoff at this, but I do think it's surprisingly important. Miles Hammond has been with his team for 2 years,
yeah.
And I spent a bit of time in the Phoenix camp last season. I was lucky enough to do so. And one thing that really stuck out to me was how much of a social asset Miles Hammond was. In fact, Kane Richardson told me that one of the things that brings the whole team together is being able to laugh at Miles Hammond. Because he is just one of those blokes that everyone can laugh at him because he is a wacky guy and they all love him. Mm. Now, I reckon that plays a surprisingly big part in this because ultimately you want someone who you like.
Yeah.
It's quite important
it when is you're important.
Living with these guys, essentially. So I think that would play the factor here for Hammond.
London Spirit, I mean, this is a mess. Well, we talked about what do the London Spirit need to achieve. What they probably need to achieve is find some left-handed batters who can play in the middle order. They haven't done that. They brought in Mitchell Marsh with the first round pick, Ollie Stone in round three, which I know that they need cover for Mark Wood, but I'm not sure that finding cover for the injury prone seamer by picking another injury prone seamer is the correct strategy to go by here. We like Michael Pepper in the bottom round, which is great. Love that. Back up to Rossington, I suppose, adds a keeping option. They haven't achieved anything.
No, and I'm struggling to work out exactly how this team will line up. We assume that Marsh will open up with Rossington, but then that means pushing Crawley to number three, which isn't really his game. But then if you open with Crawley, you're going to have to push one of Rossington or Marsh down. And again, not really their game either. So whatever you do there, you're struggling a little bit. I felt like we thought they were going to target probably a left-hander who could bat in the middle order, that sort of 5-6, that would have been the more obvious play there. Like Pollard filled that role very well for them last season. Obviously, the availability of a CPL clash means that wasn't going to happen again. But I felt like they were looking for a straight swap there. Maybe they see Marsh batting 6, but I don't think they will. I don't think that's how you get the best out of him.
I don't know why you wouldn't pick David Willey is my question.
I agree.
If you need more seam bowling options, you need a left-hander in the middle order. I know David Willey's getting a bit older. I know he's not Mitchell Marsh with the bat. Let's be realistic at this point of his career. But you need a left-hander in there. It just makes so much sense to bring in David Willey, in my opinion. And then your overseas pick can be, it could be Matthew Wade, it could be whoever you want. I'm surprised that Mitchell Marsh was the pick. Not because we don't like Mitchell Marsh. And I think the idea of Marsh and Rossington at the top of the order is great, but but if you've got Crawley at 3, Maxwell at 4, Lawrence at 5, Pepper at 6, all right-handers, I just think it makes you very one-dimensional. And then if you counter in the fact that we're not sure what Marsh is going to be as a bowler, I just don't like the way this side is built, personally.
I also feel like a lot of the players you listed from 3 to 5 and even 6 probably all want to be batting at 3 or 4 at the highest. Like Dan Lawrence really wanted batting 3 or 4. Glenn Maxwell, 3 or 4. Michael Pepper, 3 or 4. He's very much a get him in as early as possible and exploit the field. Any of those players coming in below number 4 is suboptimal and you're kind of wasting the best of that player. So whatever you do there, you're squandering someone's best role and squandering their potential somewhat, and that's a shame.
Yeah. TKC to Trent Rockett, Sonko Lagamore, we talked about that a great deal. It just makes sense, they need a keeper. He's been really good form with the the PSL, not much to talk about there. We'll get into our favourite picks of the draft very briefly. Let's do some rapid looks at the Manchester Originals. They pick up Laurie Evans and Ashton Turner at 100k, Josh Tung at 50k. We talked about the Josh Tung pick. I don't get it. If you're going to go for an upside seamer, Henry Brooks is sitting right there.
Yeah, completely agree. Wasted opportunity, in my opinion.
Yeah. Laurie Evans and Ashton Turner, 100K. Laurie, obviously great for him. I mean, hopefully all of this is behind him, and hopefully he's done the right thing and it's all kosher and he's going to get back into his career. And I hope that's the case. So I get bringing him back because he was a great leader for you last year. He was the person who drove them to the final. His leadership, his batting... really, really important for the side. And if you're thinking, well, we need a three or four, Laurie Evans can be that for you. So I really like the pick. It has complications, but he'll play in the 100, so it's fine.
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on with Ashton Turner? he's played for them before, I know that.
Yes.
But you know what? The thing they really don't need is another hitter and finisher.
It's interesting. I think they knew that Superchargers were sniffing around him, and so they felt, if we want this guy, we have to get him now. But that isn't so much the question to me as why did they want him so badly in the first place? I don't necessarily think that was the best use of that money. I think he's a good player in what he does, but I don't think that kind of player is necessarily what they needed at this point.
No, I don't think it is. And they need a left-hander as well. You know, we look at their sign, and you've got Paul Walter, obviously, batting in the top six or seven. But again, it's all right-handers and Paul Walter, and we love Paul Walter. There is no podcast that loves Paul Walter more than us. Probably not the best idea to just have Paul Walter as your left-hander in the top seven.
No, it's either him or Tom Lammerby. And Lammerby is a very one-dimensional batter. Against pace, very, very strong. Against spin, he is very, very weak. And at Old Trafford, that could be an issue. It's interesting that Lammerby could go to basically any other team and he would flourish, but at Manchester, that does limit his game quite a bit.
Yeah, and obviously if Jamie Overton's injured, probably going to play a bit of Lammerby, so that helps a bit, but again, Lammerby just doesn't fit them. It makes it quite difficult, I think. So, confused by the Originals business, and I like a left-handed overseas, and I like to see Henry Brooks, or, let's be honest, Matt Parkinson. Yeah. So not happy with that business, to be honest with you. Oval Invincibles, I mean, they're quite under the radar, really. They only have the three picks and they're all low down. Heinrich Klaassen comes in. Theoretically, they have good availability. He's been great form for South Africa. I mean, I think I get it. Especially because we were talking about like the likes of Glenn Phillips there. Similar-ish player.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I called this the other day, actually. I just felt like this could be something that made sense for them. I completely get it. I don't think he's necessarily an elite cricketer, but I think within the price brackets they had to work with, he was a good pick. So I'm completely fine with that. I think he fills a hole for them.
I don't know what Ross Wylie's doing there. I love Ross Wylie. We love Ross Wylie. I guess they want another left-hander. That's what it is, but I'm just... I don't know. Again, you could have done with a leg spinner, couldn't you?
Well, this is the thing. I think Parkinson makes that team better, in my opinion. I think Ross Wylie you can probably get later if you really had to, or just not at all. That's fine.
Find someone in the wild card. Go. I mean, they had Alex Blake there for a while. You can always find a left-handed hitter. And Ross Wylie had a down year, and I do think he's a good player. We love Ross Wylie, but just not so sure about that. Fun pick, though, Ishanullah.
Yes.
Great pick this. Final pick overseas, Pakistani quick, bowls bloody quick.
He does.
Lit up the PSL. I love this. And this is basically what they tried to achieve with Mohammad Hasnain last year.
Yes, it is. Saqib Mahmood on the coverage of the draft said that they were eyeing up Harris Ralph initially for this slot. But obviously they went another way, went down the route of Ishanullah. And do you know what? Very exciting because we've now got both of them in the competition for different teams. It's going to be really good fun. I think Ishanullah is a really high upside bowler. He's going to bowl a lot of rockets and it's going to terrify a lot of domestic players, and it's going to be a really good fun. I think he'll pair up really nicely with Saqib Mahmood and Tom and Sam Curran. That is a very exciting seam attack for me.
It's a great seam attack, I think, especially when you can see you've got Gus Atkinson there as well.
Yep.
I know that's not quite the premier name in amongst all of that, but he's a good player.
He is a good player.
You've got Sonnon Narayan in there as well, and I guess pick your poison with Danny Briggs, Nathan Souter, or maybe they go and get one of these leggies in the wild card.
Yep.
So I like the business, don't love it, but I think for what they have, they've filled out their needs pretty well. Let's talk about some of our favourite picks in the draft, Charlie. I think for you, Rhys Topley to the Northern Superchargers is a home run.
Yes, it is. I did not think he would make it this far in the draft at all. I felt like Welsh Fire may well have snipped him up way before that. If not then, maybe the Spirit would have done. But fair play, they have fixed a big issue for me, which was their seam bowling. I think they had a lot of quite samey bowlers and they didn't really have much in the way of depth bowling. Rhys Topley gives you a much stronger option there. He can take a new ball. He can bowl through the middle well if you really want to, but I feel like
strike bowler,
he is a strike bowler. He's very versatile, easily one of the best domestic bowlers in the country right now. Very good player. I think that's a really nice pickup for them. I think they're very, very happy with that.
And this is the you know, this is why I was mocking them to take Lockie Ferguson, because they really needed a gun seamer. An attack of Parnell, Kaas, Visa. Obviously, you've got Adil Rashid there. You can play Callum Parkinson, however you want to structure all of that. They just needed a gun seamer. Topley gives them that. You can chuck in the new ball. I don't know what you do with Wayne Parnell in that situation, but you can. Maybe you just, you know, you give him one at the top, one in the middle, two at the death. That might just be the way you go about it. But hey, Rhys Topley's a class player. And I think it's really exciting that he can go and lead an attack. He's going to be their key bowler. So for me, I think that's a really, really exciting pick. And we've talked about some of my favourite picks, a lot of them on the Welsh Fire. And I love Michael Pepper, and I like Sam Haynes, the Trent Rockets, I love a bit of Brad Wheel. I just want to circle back, really, as a final point. So exciting that Shaheen Shah Afridi's playing in the 100. He is really, I think, also established himself as even more of a player than we thought possible. We both did our mock draft alongs for the Welsh Fire. Hopefully you did at home as well. We'll post those findings. Both of us picked Shaheen Shah Afridi with the first pick because of the captaincy that we thought he could offer. And also, he's established himself as a batter as well. He can swing up the order. There is some confidence in that man. He can hit a ball. And you bring all of that as well as just the genuine pace. Box office cricketer, so excited to see him play in the 100. Just a coup for the tournament and a coup for the Welsh Fire. I hope he's here as long as possible.
He is arguably the most valuable T20 cricketer on the planet right now. The batting has completely rocketed his value onto another level for me. Obviously, the bowling was brilliant, and that in itself was enough to make him incredibly valuable. But now the fact you can use him as a genuine floating hitter, a left-handed floating hitter, no less, which is even more valuable, it just brings his potential worth even higher. And to have got that level of player for 100K with Tom Abel and David Willey beforehand is frankly incredible work. It's just a really exciting pick that makes you really look forward to this competition, because I want to see him play. That is the kind of pick that's going to make people come out and watch this team.
The London Spirit pick, Mitchell Marsh.
Yeah.
Shaheen Shah Afridi was there.
Yeah.
We don't know what his availability is going to be like, but it's just a brief thought I thought I'd throw into the world. But hey, this is great. And I mean, I think if we were... I mean, this is a thought experiment we do not have the time with. If you're thinking about top three players to start a T20 franchise with worldwide, Rashid Khan 1.
Mm-hmm.
Shaheen Shah Afridi 2.
I reckon so.
Might be a lot of other... There's a lot of other players out there, obviously. But, I think you could throw Bumrah, Archer, all of that, but they're injured a lot.
Yeah.
These guys play.
Surya Kumar Yadav potentially in the mix as well.
Yeah, these guys offer that all-round skill set. So just so excited he's playing in the tournament. And we're going to have so much more analysis of all of this at Podcast100 on Twitter. We're going to do some more podcasts over the next few weeks, kind of outlining all of this, what we think this means for each team, and build up to the tournament, obviously. But this was fun. So from my living room, Charlie Peters, Ed Farrer, right here, going to go play some Cricket 22 on the old PS4. Very excited about that. But for now, thank you very much for listening. We'll speak to you next time as Charlie downs his Cronenberg.